All right, our next case is 2020-1503, the State of Ohio and City of Bryan versus Stephen M. Towns. Is Mr. Schaefer here? Yes, we are.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Madam Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, we are here for the exciting task of analyzing a statute to interpret it correctly and see how it applies to this case. It is my client's position that ethics matters falling under Section 102 of the revised code, as well as two others that are constantly referred to that get grouped in with these that we'll call the ethics cases, have to go to the ethics board before, the Ohio Ethics Commission before they can be brought as a criminal charge in a court. Appellee
and the- Counsel, isn't the language may permissive, that the Ethics Commission may pursue this?
So it is permissive for the Ethics Commission to go out on their own and look. It is mandatory for them to receive. So unlike a normal criminal charge, where I as a private citizen can't go down to my municipal court and file a speeding ticket on my neighbor, I need an officer or a prosecutor to do that. I as a private citizen can go to the ethics board if I think one of our elected officials has violated the ethics rules and say, Ethics Commission, here is the evidence I have that the Attorney General has done this, which is violative of the rules.
Mr. Schaefer?
Yes.
But 102.06, without making you feel nervous that you've got to figure out what's in that section, in Division B says, the appropriate Ethics Commission shall investigate complaints, may investigate charges presented to it. So it must investigate complaints as the receiver of the complaints. But what does it mean, may investigate charges presented to it? Wouldn't that presuppose that it's probably coming from a prosecutor?
Not necessarily.
Could it come from
Yes.
Could it come from a prosecutor? So, but the prosecutor then would be doing the investigation and then presenting it to the Ethics Commission. And wouldn't that kind of harm the position that you've taken in this appeal?
I don't think the fact that someone's a prosecutor is special in this case. I think the legislature opened this process up to everyone, citizens of Ohio, citizens of other states, foreign people can come in and raise ethics complaints before the commission, and they can say they violated this statute. That's a charge. I assume that's what a charge means. They keep using phrases, charges. There's a couple other things that they call it. Complaints, charges, alleged violations, I think, is used. I don't know exactly what those terms mean, but it seems that it's more than just breaking a criminal statute. It includes other ethics issues, and all of them can be brought by anyone to this commission for review. The commission then has some things that it's commanded to do and some things that it's permitted to do. So it must receive the complaint. It can't say, no, we're not going to take the complaint. It can then investigate if it sees fit. It may look at the complaint and say, on its face, this is not a violation. If I allege to this commission, Your Honor, that you violated the ethics laws by driving a yellow car, well, that's clearly not prohibited. So the commission can look at that. It must receive it. It shall receive it. And then it can say, well, this isn't
It shall receive it. If someone files with it, they shall receive it. That seems clear enough. I mean, how do you get around Revised Code 309.08, which gives the prosecutor the authority to prosecute on behalf of the state all complaints, suits, and controversies, which the state is a party, except for some exceptions, which aren't noted here?
Right. They're doing that by taking it to the Ethics Board. This describes the Ethics Commission. This describes the procedure for doing that.
But
just like,
why does that describe the procedure? There's nothing that says that the prosecutor's authority is limited.
It isn't limited.
In statute, by whether or not something's been filed with the Ethics Board, the prosecutor has the authority to investigate and prosecute all crimes.
See, Your Honor, this is where my mind was when I submitted my merit brief, and then I realized more when I submitted my rebuttal brief. So I'm glad to discuss this with you. They're not inhibited. They keep saying that they need preclearance. They don't. Go to the Ethics Commission. That's the procedure. Just like you can't take a murder case to conclusion in a municipal court. There's a procedure that's set up.
But where does it say that the prosecutor doesn't have the authority unless it goes to the Ethics Commission?
It created this procedure. You wouldn't create a procedure if it were optional, unless you'd say it's optional.
Well, why not? I mean, there's nothing in law that prevents a prosecutor from prosecuting a complaint without going to the Ethics Commission.
I would argue sections 102 et sec are the thing in law that say this is how you do it. Go to the Ethics Commission.
Counsel, the language is they may initiate complaints.
The commission may.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
The usual procedure, if there's an ethics investigation and there's a criminal investigation, as here, they are parallel. They work in tandem with each other. But it's the prosecutor that brings the criminal charges, not the Ethics Commission. The Ethics Commission is concerned with ethics violations.
Here they're one and the same.
Okay, but that doesn't mean that the Ethics Commission has exclusive control over the criminal charge.
Correct.
That's the prosecutor's domain.
Not entirely, though. I'm sorry, did you finish?
Why not entirely?
If you look to the settlement section, where they talk about how these matters can be settled, the Ethics Commission has the authority to settle these cases. It says you can talk to the prosecutor, I'm paraphrasing, or you can settle them. The prosecutor can settle them. The Ethics Commission can settle them. So the legislature clearly didn't want the prosecutors flying solo in this case because
it depends on the type of violation that was discovered and what the evidence shows. And if it's a criminal violation, it's the prosecutor that's going to handle it. If it's merely an ethics violation, you're going to have the Ethics Commission.
In this case, they're one and the same.
Well,
and
I understand that. That doesn't deprive the prosecutor. The Ethics Commission has no superior position here.
I think a plain reading of the statute says that they could settle the case without the permission of the prosecutor.
Not if it's a criminal case.
If it's already filed in the court, you mean, as opposed to one that is before the board, but would that not attach jeopardy? That would be my theory. So if
you have support for any of this stuff you're saying here?
The statute.
That's it.
In my research, you folks have not opined on this matter to this degree yet, so I don't have any binding authority from you. I don't think they have any binding authority from you. I concede that the inferior courts have routinely gone their way. The case law.
Would you agree with me that your power of the Ethics Commission is civil in nature? They don't have the power to bring charges, criminal charges themselves, and prosecute.
They can refer the matter for a criminal prosecution, but they cannot bring it themselves. They can deprive people of property. I guess we routinely say that when the government's taking your property, that's civil, not criminal, even though fines can. If I pay court costs in a case, that attaches jeopardy in a criminal case. But apparently a fine is just civil.
So there's the separation of power between what the Ethics Commission can do and what a prosecutor can do. And as Justice DeWine read the statute, nothing limits the prosecutor's power to bring a criminal charge. It doesn't refer back to this provision, doesn't qualify the prosecutor's power. I mean, we do this all the time in other aspects of the law. If you look at a civil protection order, you can be charged criminally, but you can also be held in contempt. It's just in sanctioning those sentences that you actually have to look at the double jeopardy, and you can't do time for the contempt and the criminal. You would agree with that?
I would agree, but I would also agree that when it comes to ethics matters like this, it's dangerous to use other areas of the law as a strong buttress. I think the legislature carved this section out separately for a reason. I think the citizens of Ohio want ethics to be considered differently for a reason, mostly for the reason that, let's face it, if one political party is entirely in charge of an area of the government, they may turn their backs on a lot of ethical violations and pay no attention to them.
Well, that would establish why.
It would.
You would have an ethics commission to hold elected officials accountable for violating. But every ethics violation doesn't necessarily mean it's a crime. But the way that you're saying it is, if it's tied to an ethics violation, prosecutors somehow lose their authority.
No, they have their authority. They have their authority to follow that procedure and bring the matter to the commission, or to receive it from the commission if someone else brought it to the commission.
Counsel, let me give you a scenario. You've got the county treasurer steals $1 million, okay? That's a violation of their oath. It is an ethics violation. Would you agree?
I would.
It's also a criminal violation, a major criminal violation, right?
In a separate section, yes.
Okay, so who prosecutes that case?
For the Section 29 portion, the prosecutor, independent of anything that the Ethics Board says. For whatever violates Section 102, they follow the procedure given in Section 102.
But it's the Ethics Commission cannot prosecute something criminally.
That's correct.
Okay, all right. Just
but can't the prosecutor say, you know, there's some ethics violations it looks like here, and take the charges that the prosecutors filed and refer them to the Ethics Commission to say, you may want to investigate this?
So using the chief's example, for example, you can't take the 29 theft charge, the embezzlement, and refer that to the Ethics Commission as a Chapter 29 violation.
Well, of course not, but the commission could say, well, this also violates our statutes in 102.
Yes, and if there's an action that violates both a criminal statute and an ethics statute, in other words, something out of Chapter 29 and Section 102, prosecutor can go to town on Chapter 29 without even thinking about it. 102, it's got to go through this procedure because that's what the legislature ordained.
Can you find something in the statute that basically says that when it's a violation of 102 standing alone, that it's only the Ethics Commission that has first dibs on acting?
It's not the Ethics Commission that has first dibs on acting. They're the first forum it's taken to. Again, that's another thing that I was thinking incorrectly before. It's not who can take the action. The prosecutor can act, the Ethics Commission can act, a private citizen can act.
But the Ethics Commission can initiate a matter on its own.
Yes,
if
absolutely.
If the Ethics Commission reads something in the paper that seems egregious, it can begin a process by which it files a complaint by affidavit with the commission itself so that it can proceed.
Yes, and it can investigate that all it wants. And then when it reaches the higher burden of proof, the legislature didn't say, Ethics Commission, if you've got probable cause, go to court. It's by preponderance of evidence. If they conduct their investigation and find by preponderance of evidence that a violation occurred, then they may pass it off to the prosecutor.
But where does it say that the prosecutor or the attorney general, for that matter, cannot take a look at that first?
Because Section 102 et sec. Or they can look at it first. They can. So, yes, I don't want to fall into that line of thinking. They can. They can look at it first, and if they think that there's a violation, they go to the Ethics Commission and they say, Ethics Commission, is this a violation of the ethics law? And if the Ethics Commission says, yes, by preponderance of the evidence, we believe it is, you may now take that to court.
But if the Elections Commission has language that's specific, and our court has also found that language is specific, that it has to go to the Elections Commission first in terms of an exhaustion of administrative remedies, but that same language is not mirrored in the Ethics Commission laws, what should we do?
You should realize that ethics laws and election laws are a different species of law, that there is a vast interest in the people being able to bring these complaints and charges, and so to allow everyone, not only prosecutors who may be in bed with the criminal in this case, to bring those ethics violations. They have created this system to review it and evaluate and maintain the ethics law.
Okay, one more thing. So the elections law specifically keeps the prosecutors out until it goes to the Elections Commission. So that's the elections law. But the ethics law doesn't have that same language. So what is it in the ethics law that would cause us to find that we should treat it the same way that the elections laws are with that specific language?
You shouldn't. You should find that Section 102 says prosecutor may initiate and bring the claim to the ethics board, and that starts the ball rolling.
Counsel, how much time did you want to reserve?
I don't need to reserve any, Your Honor.
Okay.
Counsel, let's go back to the proposition that we accepted.
Yes.
Okay? To proceed as a criminal complaint without a review of the Ohio Ethics Commission. So it's your position. State cannot go forward without, if it's a 102 issue, without having the Ethics Commission say, yeah, go ahead.
They can go forward in bringing it to the Ethics Commission.
Yes.
And when I wrote that proposition of law, I was thinking wrong as to the procedure.
Well, I'm telling you, that's so what's in front of us.
I got that. What I'm saying, to go to court in a court of general jurisdiction, the common pleas, the municipal court, where you can be locked up and jailed, they have to go through the ethics board first.
So if the Ethics Commission says no, it's not an ethics violation, is it your position then the state can't go forward the prosecution?
For these sections, yes.
Under 102?
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Where, I understand your point to 102 at sequence, but what wording in 102 says that?
The fact that it all exists, and I mean, I'd have to read you the whole section. It's the whole section that establishes this procedure and says this is how it's to be done.
And where does it say that if the Ethics Commission doesn't find an ethics violation, the prosecutor cannot go forward?
It's in 106 somewhere, and I'm looking frantically to try to find it. And it's not going to say that they can't go forward. It's going to say that something like the matter is ended, shall not refer to the prosecution if it's not beyond a preponderance of evidence. It
shall not refer.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they can't go on their own. It just means the Ethics Commission cannot refer. That's the way I read it.
Probably correct. And then perhaps their immunity grant, well, the immunity granting procedure that the AG mentioned, that's really meant to be done before you do the conduct. So I want to buy this thing from so-and-so. Is that a violation of the contract rules? You ask before. But so there's a question to what degree they can immunitize at that point. They could issue an advisory opinion at that point saying, Mayor Bob's actions were perfectly fine under the statute. I think the prosecution would have a hard time winning at that point.
Well, now let's go back to the proposition, which you say isn't really what's in front of us today, right? I mean, that's
Wording of it was bad. Yes.
Should we IAA this case improvidently allowed because that's not what we're talking about?
No, you should correctly craft the law so that the citizens of Ohio are protected from their elected officials who are committing ethics violations. And you should place the trust to do that within the ethics board, which is by its nature bipartisan. And I say you should do this. I'm saying the legislature has done that. You should simply say that the legislature has done this and recognize the danger of malicious prosecution that is now sweeping the country, thankfully kept out of the state of Ohio, and I think that's in large part to your work at keeping politics out of the judiciary, Madam Chief, and I thank you for that. But it's coming. Your federal brethren are going off the deep end. I don't practice in those courts because I don't trust those judges to not be political. And I'm a lawyer saying that.
Mr. Schaefer, I think the section you were looking for is 102.06 Division C. Now, you've got three scenarios where the Ethics Commission essentially dismisses a complaint before it. It does not find by a preponderance of the evidence that the facts in the complaint are true or constitute violation of particularized sections, which do some include 29, 21.42, and .43, or if the commission is not scheduled a hearing within 90 days, or if it is not finally disposed of the complaint within 6 months. So if it doesn't actually adjudicate the complaint, the statute requires that it dismiss the complaint. Now, couldn't at that point a prosecutor pick that up?
I would say yes. They followed the procedure. At that point, they could pick it up.
Why couldn't a prosecutor pick it up before then?
Because they hadn't followed the procedure set forth by the legislature. Just like you can't go into common pleas without an indictment. You got to go to the grand jury first.
But I think you agreed with Justice Kennedy that this was more of a civil matter, that there was, and with the Chief Justice O'Connor, that you really, there's no prosecuting authority or power in the Ethics Commission. So why does a prosecutor have to wait for a civil process to take place, especially without the specific language that exists for the Elections Commission, in order to act?
Because that's what the legislature wanted and wrote in the statute. I'm sorry to have to give you that answer, but
thank you.
You've
used your time.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Mr. Weaver.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Chief Justice O'Connor, Associate Justices. I suspect this might be the first time this sentence was ever spoken in front of the Ohio Supreme Court. Putting confidential child abuse records on Facebook is the opposite of confidentiality. That's how this case started. We brought a misdemeanor prosecution under 102.03B, which is a criminal statute. It's possible to be in Section 102 and be a criminal statute. It's a first-degree misdemeanor. The defendant in this case, now the appellant, was sentenced to jail. It was a suspended sentence, but it's a criminal case. The Sixth District, in a master class of judicial writing, unanimously went through every issue in this case and spent two pages on this particular issue, upholding the view that this court said in Buckeye Electric, which is that when a prosecutor is operating and there's another investigative agency operating, like the medical board, like the oil and gas division, like the Joint Legislative Exchange Commission, then the prosecutor and the Ethics Commission can be on dual tracks. That was the holding in Buckeye Electric, that prosecutors can move forth independently. Now, there is one exception, and Justice Bruner mentioned it. The General Assembly specifically, for whatever reason, decided to treat the Elections Commission differently. 3517.153 simply says that a prosecutor like myself, I have a red light until the Elections Commission's proceedings are complete. Doesn't require a referral. It requires simply for a prosecutor to wait until the election proceedings are complete. Now, I think it was brought out here as a part of our earlier argument that there is no case supporting the position that Mr. Towns advances. And I think he may have muddled the issue a little bit when he talked about charges from the statute, from 102, as being criminal charges. I would encourage the court to find the clarity in the Ohio Administrative Code, 102.11c, which defines charge for purposes of the Ohio Ethics Commission. And in the Ethics Commission practice, it's actually a lesser matter than a complaint. A complaint requires an affidavit of personal knowledge filed with the Ethics Commission, and that starts the complaint process. As outlined in OAC 102.01.01c, a charge could be any information that comes to the commission. And then the commission can look into it and move forward if they choose to. And so there's this dual track set up by these statutes. And when you look at, for example, 102.06G1, the General Assembly says the Ethics Commission or the prosecutor can compromise or settle. This is classic dual track language. Either of them can compromise, either of them can settle. So in the case of 102.06G, we're identifying two different government actors. We have the prosecutor, you can move forward or back. You have the Ethics Commission, you can move forward or back. When the General Assembly spoke directly to the Ethics Commission in 102.06A, it simply said you shall receive and may initiate complaints. And so a requirement to receive is not a mandate of exclusive jurisdiction. If there were perhaps a statute that required police departments to receive speeding complaints, that wouldn't stop the highway patrol from enforcing the speed statute on the highways, because these are different agencies that have dual tracks. And so when we look at that language of compromising or settling, if we take Mr. Towns' viewpoint, the prosecutor can't settle a charge because he can't have a charge yet, because he's waiting on the Ethics Commission to act. Moving the authority from 30908A, the very clear authority of the prosecutor, as described in this court's decision in Buckeye Electric, over to the Ethics Commission, and if they don't take the appropriate action, the prosecutor can't go forward. That would be a wholesale transfer of prosecution authority to the Ethics Commission. I would also encourage you to look at 102.08. This is the provision that shields a public official if she goes to the commission to ask for an advisory opinion. So imagine this. There's a township trustee somewhere, and she wants an advisory opinion. She asks the Ethics Commission if she can do something. They see you can. Well, then she can't be prosecuted now because there's a shield of immunity under 102.08. Under Mr. Towns' construction, that shield shouldn't be necessary, because if only the Ethics Commission can launch a prosecution, why would you need a shield from prosecution? Who are you shielding from? The shield is meant to send a word to the prosecutor who's on a dual track. You cannot bring forward a case because we have issued an advisory opinion that said it's correct. At best, Mr. Towns' construction here is an implication of what's read out of 102. And although I try not to do Latin in front of juries, I can probably do Latin here. Expressum facit cassare tacitum, which is what is expressly done causes the invalidation of what's silent. How does that apply here? The General Assembly expressly gave the Elections Commission the ability to put up a red light, to hold off on a prosecutor while they do their work. And the fact that they expressly did it in the Elections Commission statute means that we cannot imply it somewhere else. The General Assembly knows how to do this. They showed us they know how to do it by writing the statute for the Elections Commission. Now, when you received this case, you saw there were two amicus briefs filed on behalf of the state's position. You were, of course, not surprised at all that the Prosecuting Attorneys Association weighed in on the side that prosecutors can move independently. Nobody was shocked when you saw that. But perhaps you might have been shocked a little bit when the Ethics Commission joined our position, and you'll hear from the Attorney General's office representing the Ethics Commission. The Ethics Commission itself says it doesn't have this power, and that it's inconsistent with the statute that it grants. The analogy I think has been helpful to me as I've been thinking about this over these many months is if somebody has abdominal pain and they know it's appendicitis, they can go directly to a surgeon. That's the specialist who can solve that problem. But if they're not sure what it is, they can go to a general practitioner who may do some tests, and maybe they'll refer it to a specialist. In the case at bar, as special prosecutors, we knew Mr. Towns had violated the confidentiality statute by putting confidential child abuse reports on Facebook. We didn't need the tools of the Ethics Commission to do further inquiry. We could have. Prosecutors often will send a case to the Ethics Commission to ask them to use their tools to look into it further before the prosecutor makes a prosecution decision, but in this case, we didn't need it. And so to wrap this up, I would ask you to end by looking at 10207. Let me just give you one final hypothetical that will help you understand this case from our perspective. 10207 says that the Ethics Commission staff and members have to keep certain information confidential. They're not allowed to release it. For example, a university trustee who volunteers to be a trustee, their entire financial statement is something that has to be kept confidential. Imagine a hypothetical where some rogue folks over at the Ethics Commission decided to leak all of that and put it on Facebook. That would violate 10207. Mr. Towns invites you to craft a rule that in order for those Ethics Commission actors to be prosecuted, they themselves would have to launch the prosecution by voting to approve it. That can't be the law. And we urge you to decline that invitation. We think it's an easy call. It's just as easy as knowing that confidential child abuse reports have no business being put on Facebook.
Thank you. Mr. Blanton, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, Associate Justices, may it please the court. The question before this court today is a narrow one. Is the Ohio Ethics Commission a statutorily required checkpoint on the road to prosecuting violations of Ohio's ethics laws? And the plain language of Chapter 102 provides the answer. It's not. Because the Ethics Commission is a creature of statute, inured with only such powers as are specifically granted to it by law, those statutes are where the inquiry begins and where it must end. The language of 10206 is clear. It does impose certain duties and obligations on the commission. The one that's of most importance today is the duty to receive complaints. And that's correct. The legislature said to the commission, open the doors, throw them wide, receive whatever comes in, and investigate those that are based on affidavit and personal knowledge. And you can open up your own complaints or investigate charges. But what's interesting about 10206 and is lost in the appellant's argument is that it speaks only to the duties and obligations placed upon the commission. Nowhere in 10206 is there a requirement, is there language that specifically requires an individual to file his or her complaint with the Ethics Commission before going to a prosecutor. Likewise, there's nothing expressly included in 10206 or any other statute to expressly preclude a law enforcement agency or a prosecutor from receiving, investigating, or acting upon complaints or allegations of unethical or illegal conduct unless and until a report has been made to the Ethics Commission, the Ethics Commission has completed its work, or require any partnership in any way. It just doesn't exist. And that's key, because prosecuting attorneys and city attorneys are vested with their own independent authority under 30908 and 733.53 to prosecute crime in Ohio. The Ethics Commission isn't seeking the authority to be the roadblock or a checkpoint. We're not asking you to read that in or to make it out of whole cloth, because it doesn't exist. Instead, the Commission's statutes work in tandem with the more general powers and authorities the revised code section provides to give aggrieved citizens parallel, non-exclusive avenues to address allegations of unethical conduct by public officials and employees and the entities that do business with them. Contrary to the appellate assertion, this parallel system does nothing to denigrate the Commission's role as a regulator or undermine its work. Instead, this is an opportunity for citizens to have access to justice, to have access to an adjudication. The Commission's complaint process exists for when there is a conflict at the local level, or when a citizen is not comfortable with bringing an allegation of unlawful or unethical conduct to a local prosecutor or local law enforcement. But that's not really the crux of the matter. At the core, this is a question of legislative intent and plain language. If the legislature had intended to create a single point of entry for complaints of this nature, or provide for a period during which Ohio's prosecutors were precluded from taking action on them, it knew exactly how to do it. It had the language ready at hand. You look only at Section 2743.03A1, which makes the Ohio Court of Claims the exclusive venue for all civil actions against the state permitted by a waiver of immunity found in 2732.02, or, as this court previously mentioned, the Elections Commission. 3517.153C prohibits Ohio's prosecutors from commencing prosecutions for violations of Ohio's ethics laws unless and until a complaint has been filed with the Elections Commission and the Commission has completed its work on that complaint.
Is there any merit to the fact that 102 is basically a more specific statute than 309?
Your Honor, in this circumstance, no, because there is not that preclusion language. The legislature is very familiar with how to, you know, stall prosecutors or invest an entity with specific jurisdiction or authority over a subject matter, and they chose not to do it. The other part that the other, and Mr. Weaver mentioned this, the other issue that makes it clear that the legislature did not intend to have this exclusivity in place, this right of first refusal for lack of anything else, is 102.08e, which gives the authority to the commission to grant pre-passage through the issuance of written opinions, formal opinions, on certain conduct. The commission is empowered, if a person approaches the commission with a question of whether conduct is or is not lawful, or would or would not be appropriate or ethical, to issue an opinion which, you know, if the opinion says that the conduct is not unethical or unlawful, and if the requester or any other person acts in accordance with and reliance on that opinion, provides insulation against a charge. If the legislature didn't intend for there to be this parallel prosecution opportunity, parallel investigative opportunity, 102.08 wouldn't really make much sense.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've used your 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Towns, do you have any rebuttal? I'll give you a minute.
Thank you, ma'am. The only thing I'm going to say is don't look at this as the prosecution needs permission to go forward. They can go forward. They have to do it in the proper forum. You can't take juvenile cases to common pleas without going through the proper procedure. You can't bring an indictment on a felony without going through a grand jury. This does not limit the prosecution. It doesn't make them get a permission slip. It makes them follow a procedure. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, we call a recess.
All rise.